From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk to you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question, the number to call is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, we have to have good topics. So today, we're going to look at more information about the Mediterranean diet. I call it the Med Diet, the king of diets. And this is new information that came out of the Annals of Internal Medicine. I think something that will change people's minds about diet. And then we're going to talk also about food and drugs, the sell-by date, when drugs actually have the expiration date. What does it mean? Where are the safety issues? Where are the potency issues? And what else is going on when it comes to things like sell-by now?
And our recipe has not expired today. What is it?
No, it is not expired.
It's nice and fresh.
It is a delicious recipe. It's Tuscan grilled pork chops, and it's a favorite recipe, certainly a favorite recipe that you are going to like for sure. Tuscan grilled pork chops, good.
This sounds like a winner. I'll have to get this on the grill. Well, let's go to our callers now at 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now from Shawnee, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, how are y'all today?
Well, I'm really good. What can we do for you today?
Well, I wanted to tell you guys about a little diet that I did a few years ago that seems to work very good for me. And what I did was I decided to eat bean burritos for lunch and dinner twice a day, Monday through Friday, and eat a regular breakfast like oatmeal or scrambled egg, something like that, and then on the weekends, I kind of eat whatever I want within reason. And the way I came up with this is watching a football game with a friend of mine who's a dietitian at a hospital. I was discussing the fact that I'm a delivery man and I pretty much live in my vehicle all day and eat fast food.
Oh.
And I had ballooned up to 310 pounds.
Wow.
Okay.
So I wanted to do something. I was desperate because I was 50 years old and just I felt like I was going to die if I kept that up. And he called me in a couple of days, and he said, well, you're going to think I'm crazy, but if you go to, can I say the brand name of the restaurant?
Sure, why not?
Okay. He said, go to Taco Bell and get their bean burrito, just plain bean burrito, because they don't use animal fats to cook with. And he said he had some friends that were vegan, that they get all their beans there. And he said, give it a try and try to stick with it and eat two for lunch and two for dinner and then have a light snack in the evening, like sherbet ice cream or something like that to satisfy the sweet tooth.
Well, I want to ask, before we get into the health side of this, I would worry about myself on this getting really, really bored. You're okay with eating the same, the bean burrito for lunch, the bean burrito for dinner, Monday through Friday?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it because I ate what I wanted for breakfast, and then the snack in the evening sort of just satisfied my cravings for something different.
You know, it's kind of interesting. On the boredom issue, when I was a kid, I would eat bologna sandwiches every day. You know, for about 2 years, my mother would make bologna, Oscar Mayer bologna, white bread, mustard, no lettuce, little bag of chips, and that was the same thing.
What you have in your bag right now there, Zorba, I see.
Got it right here. What happened to your weight? And then we'll talk about...
Went from 310... down to 205.
Unbelievable.
And I did that
That's
in
impressive.
6 months and just a little under 7 months.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. I want to talk a bit about the good things about this. And first of all, when you look at fast food, you know, there's fast food and there's fast food. And the problem with fast food tends to be too much salt, too much fat, too many calories, you know, they're wasted calories. But it's not the case. All fast food is not the same. So when you look at beans, beans are legumes. And we know that legumes are good for us. We know it reduces heart attack, stroke rate. It's satisfying, and we don't get enough of it. And when you look at a burrito, it's not fried. So the burrito is not fried. I haven't gone to the website to look up the calories for this. But if you went from 310 to 205, you are doing a great job.
That sounds great. Do you get, do you get some veggies in there, maybe a bag of baby carrots in the truck with you?
No, actually, I didn't. I pretty much just stuck to that.
Just the burritos.
Sometimes I would eat pretzels. I'd buy the pretzel sticks. Uh-huh. And but I really didn't eat those very often.
But you did. You made another really good choice, because when you look at the calories for pretzels versus chips, because we like crunch, have pretzels have roughly half the calories of chips, and they're low fat. And so it's a very interesting issue. If you go, let's say you want to look up Taco Bell burritos and you want to see what they actually have in them and how much fat, what you do is you Google Taco Bell burritos. That's number one. Number two, never ever go to the website of the company, because they will always try to sell you product. So if you want information, you look down beyond the company. That always comes to the top on Google. And you go to a number of other websites, Calorie King, Calorie Count are good ones, and they will give you an evaluation. Now, the website of the company might give you an evaluation, but you know what? I never trust it as much as an independent website. And I think if you look up Bean Burritos, you'll see the fact that it actually is a good product to have. Now, when I say good, I don't have the website in front of me, but clearly, if you went from 310 to 205, you did a great job. And as Rob said, if you were not bored, and frankly, eating a good food is good. If you're not bored like Rob would be, now my wife Penny would want to make sure she put hot sauce in the burritos. That would be the most important thing. If you're not bored and you did it, keep it up. It's working. But like Rob said, I'd probably add some carrot sticks to that, because that'll give you some beta carotene and some, some other vitamins.
Well, and also before I started this, I was taking blood pressure medicine and cholesterol uh-huh. medication. Mm-hmm. And now? After I got my weight down, I had all my blood work done, and the doctor told me that I'm in all my low end of the normal ranges. And now, that's been 10 years ago. I'm 60 years old now, and I still maintain that weight. And I still
You are a champion. You have done a great job, and you've really taken the bull by the horns in making a lifestyle change. And a lifestyle change to actually improve cardiovascular problems are far better than actually taking a medication if you can do it. So keep up the good work, stay on the diet, and maybe others will follow the burrito diet.
Well, I was going to say, Zorba, this is a problem for people who live on the road, who work on the road
Absolutely.
A lot, finding
right.
good, healthy
right.
food. But
right.
it seems
right.
like apart from that burrito option, more and more gas stations are starting to have, maybe some bananas, maybe some fresh vegetables
right.
or fruits.
Oh, yeah. No, in my little town of Oregon, Wisconsin, you can actually go and get carrot sticks, you can get bananas, you can get fruit. And the issue, of course, is then finding foods, and that means looking around, looking at the calorie count of what you have, and making good choices.
How about you? Do you have a question for Dr. Zorba? Call in now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, we've got some new information about an old classic, the Mediterranean diet. You've been talking about this Mediterranean diet. It's a good thing. What is it, though?
Well, the Mediterranean diet, first of all, is a diet that has plentiful fruits and vegetables. You cook with olive oil. Nuts, we have nuts, mostly tree nuts, regular nuts, not just peanuts. Peanut is not a nut. It's a legume, but it also has peanuts in it. And they looked at the Med diet, and the Med diet is kind of interesting. We know that it reduces cardiovascular disease. But the latest study was an epidemiological study where they took all of the Mediterranean diet studies together and say, let's look and see what's in the diet that's important. And what they discovered was, for years, Rob, we've been talking about low fat, right?
Low fat all the time.
Low fat. This low fat, that. Do you remember Snackwells?
I do.
See, Snackwells are just, you were probably just a baby.
Packaged.
It was packaged carbohydrate, and it was low fat, and they took the place by storm. It was totally made of carbohydrates. It was sort of like a Twinkie as a cookie sold as a Snackwell. It had a great thing.
It was low fat, so it was healthy. It was health
healthy,
food.
But it turned out Snackwells were not healthy at all. And so they look specifically at fats now, and they discovered that when you eat the right type of fat, olive oil, the fat from nuts, the fat from fish, that you can really have as much fat as you want to, that this idea of low fat maybe is misplaced. What we should be talking about is low bad fat. So when they did the analysis, they found moderate amount of dairy products. We live in Wisconsin, so dairy is our icon, right? If we don't have dairy, what do we do? Moderate amount of dairy products, which has dairy fat. Low amount of animal products, not fish we're talking about. We're talking about beef, pork. Remember when they said pork is the new white meat, which it isn't?
Not really. No.
Chicken. That's the Mediterranean diet, but more fish. Fish twice a week. Salmon, which is really an excellent fish, a high-fat fish. And so I think we doctors and everyone else has to rethink this concept of low fat. And my best friend Dan Barry, who's a doc, years ago said, you know, fat is not the issue. The type of fat is the issue. And this study shows that's really the important thing.
Right. We need to sort this out, it sounds like, because it used to be we avoided all fat, including the olive oil or that avocado.
Right.
We'd say, oh, it's an avocado. It's high fat. It's unhealthy. But saying that some fat is okay doesn't mean that your dinner should be chicken fried steak with onion rings and a half dozen donuts for dessert. It's not a license to eat any fat we want, right?
No, it's not a license to eat any fat that we want to.
Which I'm a little disappointed by, frankly. Can you try to get that research for me?
Yes, chicken fried steak and the advantage. But, you know, the other thing that's interesting, we talk about our gentleman that we talked to before. He went to Taco Bell. He found something that was healthy there, bean burritos, and he accented that. Legumes, nuts, olive oil, salmon, moderate amount of dairy products. That's the type of fat, as you said, that's good. Chicken fried steak, lots of beef, lots of pork, lots of brats. That's the bad fat. And you're right. That's how we have to re-engineer how we're thinking about diet.
And round out the Mediterranean diet for us, because it isn't just good fat, of course.
Right.
It's our veggies, right?
Yeah, it's our veggies. It's our fruits. The other thing about it is that people along the Mediterranean Sea sit down and enjoy their food not in their car. They actually sit with other people. They usually have a glass of wine with their meal. They don't have it separately. They don't drink to get drunk. They sit down and relax. And that's a very important part of the med diet.
They don't eat their meal at their desk in their public radio office, say. I think I'm hearing some personal advice from me. I think Mediterranean, I think Venice, they're out in their gondola. Being paddled along, eating their food.
That's right.
We'll bring
a gondola into the station.
Out onto the lake.
That's all.
It's going to be great. Well, if you want some advice from Dr. Zorba, give a call now. 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's go back to our callers, Zorba. We're going now to Jacksonville, Florida. Hi there.
Hi. How are you guys?
We are just great today. How are you?
I am fantastic.
But you're calling, so maybe you need a little bit of advice, I bet.
Well, a few years ago, I started gaining weight, and I went to the doctor, and they said I had a slow thyroid. And then, when I went back, they said I had Hashimoto's, hypothyroid, which is, I guess, kind of like an autoimmune disorder that affects your thyroid. Well, I have been on Synthroid, and everything has been fine. I still haven't been able to get my weight down. I went to visit my mom. My mom is a little mortified, you know, that I've gained so much weight. And I've kept this from her for a long time, and I finally told her, Mom,
wait,
I'm sorry.
You kept what from her? Your weight?
I kept the
thyroid?
I didn't tell her because I know she'd be so worried about me.
Sure, of course.
She, you know, I'm her only child, so.
I'm an only child, too, by the way.
Yeah, you understand, right?
And I, 100%. I never told my mother anything about any of my health or anything else. I didn't tell her about a lot of things because whatever I would tell her about, she worried because my mother was a worrier. And you bring that up, it's so amazing. It's like, I can't tell her anything.
It's
all
on you.
Yes. That is so funny because that's exactly how my mom is.
Yeah.
So, of course, I told her and she did all of this research. She called me and she said, I figured it out. It's gluten. Gluten is the enemy. You must stop eating gluten right now. So, you know, I try to avoid it a little. And every day she calls me Dr. Zorba. Every day. Did you have gluten today, Kitty? Did you have gluten? Did you have any gluten? No, Mom, I didn't. And if I have it and I admit that I had gluten to her, then she yells at me.
All right. Well, let's sort this out. We've got this thyroid issue that it sounds like has been diagnosed. A lot of people, Zorba, have diagnosed themselves with a problem with gluten. A lot of research out there saying some people need to avoid gluten. A lot of people really just don't. How do you start sorting this out?
So you had Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and you've been treated for that, obviously.
Correct.
And then, so are you on any thyroid, you're on thyroid replacement right now?
I'm on Synthroid.
Okay, so you're on Synthroid, and your TSH, that's the blood test that we do, is within the range. There's a range that we go to. And that's what your doctor does. They do the range and adjust the thyroid based on that.
Yes.
How much weight did you gain?
Like 30 pounds.
Oh, that's a lot of weight.
I know.
I mean, I'm not telling you. I didn't mean to say that, but that's a lot. When did the diagnosis happen? How long has it been?
I guess it's been maybe about 4 years ago. And I used to be
very active.
So wait a second.
Time out. You kept this from your mother for 4 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
But you understand. She's a worrier.
Oh, I understand.
You understand.
I understand.
Now, every conversation is about my weight now and the thyroid.
Right.
So I can relate.
I can relate 100%. So as Rob said, gluten is sort of the poster child for everything. Mm-hmm. Cancer, heart disease, depression, and divorce are all caused by too much gluten in America. Even our political gridlock in Washington is caused by gluten.
If they just go gluten-free, we'd get this country sorted out.
No, we would get back to the moon, and we would be colonizing the moon had it not been for
without
gluten.
Wheat.
And the problem without wheat, the problem is there is so much garbage. Now, the internet is wonderful, but it's garbage in, garbage out. And so your mother went to some kind of website and said the problem with your weight and the Hashimoto's and your thyroid is due to gluten. And let me assure you with 100% assurance, even though I will get emails, nasty emails from the people who are for a gluten-free America, that in fact, this is not due to gluten at all. And if you look at it from a weight point of view, it turns out there are lots of things that enter into it. And the Hashimoto's thyroiditis and the replacement are really part of it. So I've got a recommendation for you. First of all, tell your mother in a very nice way to stop calling you up about gluten, because you talked to us on the radio and you said gluten is not the culprit. There's no scientific evidence. And so the websites she's going to are not good. You know, you have to figure out a way of phrasing it for her. And then you have to tell her that what you're going to do about your weight, because that's maybe part of her fear. And that, of course, is always a major issue. And I highly recommend, and we've just talked about, there are a number of books on the Mediterranean diet. The Mediterranean diet for idiots, the Mediterranean diet for dummies, the beginning Mediterranean diet. If you go to any bookstore or Amazon and you look up, you will find a number of things. And look at that, because a properly high-fat diet of using the correct fats of olive oil, fish, moderate dairy products is more satisfying and will tend to help you with your weight.
That sounds great. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, you're most welcome. And you know what? If your mother has any questions, have her call me.
Okay.
We'll talk to Mom for you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
All right, Zorba, before we go back to our callers at 1-800-462-7413 and before our break, let's check in again with our favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email comes to us from a listener named Barbara, who sent us some helpful information about the spelling of the word salmon, not salmon. Salmon. She writes, "Dear Zorba."
Wait a minute. This means it's the spelling police, not the
well,
grammar
you know,
police?
We use grammar loosely.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Diction mm-hmm. is part of it. Spelling, mm-hmm. uh-huh. sure, why not? She writes, "Dear Zorba, on a recent show, you were asking why the L in mm-hmm. salmon is silent. Well, here you go. Okay, here's what she says. Up to the end of the 15th century, so this is historical spelling, the word salmon was spelled in English without an L, derived from the old French word salmon with a U,
oh.
or maybe salmon. Oh. The spelling was later changed to be consistent with the Latin word for the fish, salmo.
Oh.
Forgive my Latin mm-hmm. mispronunciation. Unfortunately, even though the spelling was changed, the French-influenced pronunciation without an L remained. So the L in the English word salmon is silent.
In America.
In America.
Now,
I think in
now, no,
the UK.
No, no.
You, the UK?
No, I have very good Tibet friends who live in India, and they speak excellent English with a bit of an Indian accent. And when I've gone to restaurants with them, guess what they order? They order salmon.
Salmon.
So for them, It is not silent. It is an important part of the word.
I have two reactions to that, pro and con. One, I love the idea of bringing back the L in Selman, mm-hmm. and we can make that a thing.
Okay.
My reservation is that when I start a word Selman, I want to add Ella to it, Salmonella, and I don't want to eat anything to do with that.
No, it's nothing to
so
do with
are you pro L in salmon, Selman, or not, Zorba? Where do you stand on this vital
well,
issue?
Well, we'll let our listeners chime in with emails or call us at 1-800, I can never remember the number.
462-7413. Hey, listeners, in addition to your way of pronouncing, I can't even pronounce. Salmon, did you catch a mistake that Zorba made? Or even if you're just fishing for attention, post your thoughts to Facebook or send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for the good doctor. But before we get back to our callers, Zorba, tell us about our recipe for Tuscan grilled pork chops.
Now, that's right.
I want to make it clear here to Star Wars fans. We're talking Tuscan as in the region in Italy, not as in the Tuscan Raiders, right? From Tatooine, Luke Skywalker's home planet.
We're not talking about Luke Skywalker at all.
I feel much better about the recipe.
We're talking more about Italy. I don't actually know. You know, they never showed. Well, they did show people eating on the Star Wars.
And not the Tuscan Raiders, though.
No.
I don't
want to
think about what
they ate.
That's right.
And I don't really know what they ate. They were kind of sitting around.
Yeah.
Well, that is very true. So, first of all, you know, the issue with pork, if you remember years ago, we're talking about years ago, they advertised it as the other white meat with the idea that pork would have the fat that poultry has. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it doesn't. So chicken is really better than pork. And let's not forget with the Mediterranean diet that, in fact, fish is better than chicken. On the other hand, if you're going to eat something like a pork chop, which is just fine because I believe in moderation in all things, including moderation, this is a delicious recipe to think about. And I happen to love pork chops, mm-hmm. which I will eat periodically. It's an inexpensive dish. My wife likes it. I like it. And this is a recipe that I think you will like.
So pork chops, it's like our friend Cookie Monster might say now, it's a sometimes food.
Yes, it's a something. You know, I can tell that you have children at home because you think of Cookie Monster.
They're a little past the Cookie Monster stage.
Yes, but
now.
You're close enough so
but
that it comes
in.
into your brain. So, so here's it. We start out with 4 bone-in pork loin chops, about 6 ounce chops.
4 6-ounce bone-in pork loin chops. Got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
That's 2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
And you know, when you go to the store, and I go to a number of stores, and I have olive oil. Olive oil is not all the same.
Right.
So some olive oil is more robust, some olive oil is less robust. And I think it's important for people to realize if you go to the store, you may try different kinds of olive oil. For some people like a brighter taste and some people like less than a bright taste.
Or if you're like me, you just stand there overwhelmed by the selection. Pick something that's in a pretty bottle.
That's right. So would you pick the pretty bottle or the cheapest?
You know, I kind of negotiate between the two. If it's cheap, but it's that looks cheap, I'll get it maybe a step up if they've got good graphic design.
And you know, there was something else. There was an article that I read a bit ago in the New York Times about olive oil and the fact the mafia was getting involved in putting fake oil in the olive oil. And so it's tested in the U.S. to make sure it's 100%
olive oil. That makes you feel better. Okay, that's our olive oil.
1 teaspoon kosher salt. You're going to want to use more to taste.
1 little tea kosher salt.
Of course, you're going to have pepper in there.
A little bit of pepper.
A teaspoon teaspoon of freshly grated lemon zest.
One little tea finely grated lemon zest.
That's right. 3 tablespoonfuls of freshly squeezed lemon juice. And it's very important, especially with this recipe, that it be lemon juice. You're going to be zesting the lemon. Do not use reconstituted lemon juice at all for this.
So that's 3 big tea fresh lemon juice.
That's right. You're going to get 2 15-ounce cans of cannelloni or other white beans. The cannelloni beans are a firmer bean than a navy bean, but you want to drain them and rinse them.
So that's 2 15-ounce cans of white beans. Rinse and drain them.
3 medium garlic cloves minced.
3 minced medium garlic cloves.
1 packed cup of baby spinach leaves thinly sliced.
1 cup of baby spinach leaves thinly sliced, packed into that cup.
That's right, packed into the cup. 1/2 cup of thinly sliced green onions.
1/2 cup thinly sliced green onions.
12 green olives pitted and quartered.
Ooh, I like olives.
Yeah, and green olives usually come, you can use the ones with the pimentos in them. That's what I would have.
All right, 12 green olives pitted and quartered, or maybe pimentos.
Yeah, there's in there. 1 tablespoon of balsamic vinegar.
Big tea balsamic vinegar.
A couple of tablespoonfuls of thinly sliced sage leaves.
2 big tea thinly sliced sage leaves.
Teaspoon of freshly chopped rosemary.
Teaspoon finely chopped fresh rosemary.
And 2 tablespoonfuls of parsley, the flat leaf if you have it.
2 big tea chopped parsley, ideally flat leaf. I like the sound of this so far, Zorba. I like these flavors. How does it all come together?
So here's what we do. First of all, my first thought is there's a guy who wrote Rumen's Recipes, incredible cookbook, and he always said when you start out, get everything together. So there's a lot of stuff in this recipe. Put it all together when you're actually going to start up. Think about what you're going to do and then jump in. So smear the pork chops with a teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil, sprinkle with some salt and pepper, set it aside for about a room temperature for about 1 hour or less. Could be 15 minutes, 30 minutes. Then in a medium bowl, put in the lemon zest, lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon of salt and pepper to taste. Whisk it to dissolve the salt. Then whisk in 1 tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil. Add the beans, the garlic, the spinach, the green onions, the olives. Stir it to combine. So you're making really this delicious sort of tasty thing. Taste it, put in some salt and pepper as needed. Set that aside. Then in another small bowl, you put balsamic vinegar, the remaining garlic, the remaining 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Whisk it around. Whisk in the 2 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil, the sage, the rosemary, the parsley. Set it aside. Here's what we do now. So you've got these 3 different things. Set the grill. If you're going to, you can use a broiler, but you really want to do this on a grill. High heat, get it nice and hot. For some people, that's 5 or 10 minutes. For my Weber grill, it's actually about 15 minutes. Arrange the pork chops on a grill pan or put it directly on the grill. Cook for 5 minutes on each side. Turn the chops and grill until they're done. You can either use a thermometer. I always go to Google to find out how many degrees it is because I can never remember, and I'm not going to recite it now because if I recite it, it will be wrong, and the temperature police will call me on it, so yes. I am not going to do a temperature police, but grill it until it's done, or you can open it up and make sure it's not pink. And then meanwhile, you spoon the white bean salad into the serving platter on individual plates, set the grilled pork chops on top of that salad, drizzle with the balsamic vinaigrette, get 4 people together, have them sit at a table with a glass of wine, put on the best music you want to have, and bon appetit.
This sounds fantastic. And I could see this going really well on a bed of, I don't know, Napa cabbage, real mild cabbage, or maybe a green or something like that. And then the flavors of this are going to drip on there and dressing for your greens there.
Absolutely. And if you want a copy of today's recipe, you know where you can find it. You can go to my website, zorbapastor.org. You will see that recipe, other recipes, wonderful stuff on the site, that zorbapastor.org, or remember, you can find us through Facebook.
Back to our callers we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Joining us now is a listener in Dakota, Minnesota. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, sure. What did you want to ask about?
Well, my question is about my 10-month-old son. He had colds all throughout the winter, but then it never seemed to really go away as we hit spring and summertime. He still had stuff in his chest and constant runny noses, especially in the morning, just gobs coming out and itchy eyes. And we were starting to think it was allergies, but when I went to the doctor for his checkup, she basically said that unless it's a food allergy, babies don't really get allergies like, you know, older children or adults do as far as from different things outside. I was wondering if, well, one, if that was true, and then I guess what options we have for, you know, babies that's so young to mm-hmm. help ease and comfort them.
A couple of questions. So does the baby go to childcare?
Yes.
Well, that's the issue. The issue is viruses. You know, when you go to childcare, what happens is there are other babies in childcare also. Your baby weighs how much?
A little over 20 pounds.
Over 20. Oh, 20 pounds. And how old is your baby again? 10 months?
It's 10 months. He's a
big 10 boy. Months, 20 pounds, big boy. Big boy. Big boy or big girl?
Big boy.
Big boy. That's a big boy. Well, what happens at daycare is you've got other kids around, you've got parents around, you've got the daycare workers around, and kids get viruses. And the immune system is just working on this virus, is getting a memory in there. It's part of the important thing that actually is going on. Your pediatrician or family doctor was right. Kids on the whole, but infants don't really get allergies
really?
In this way. Yeah, it's more of multiple viral infections from daycare. And that's ultimately what happens. And then the question that goes on, first of all, after 6 months, the immunity that you have given your baby through the placenta, pretty much gone after 6 months. So a lot of times babies don't get much in the way of 3 to 6 months because the baby still has your placental antibodies and they are gone. Vanished. They're not present. And now your child's immune system is sort of popping up and producing all these, you know, reacting to all these viral infections. So that's what it is.
I really thought she was wrong on that one.
Well, so I wonder about symptom relief. I mean, viruses, you know, you can't take antibiotics for them. We know that. But are there things that you can do for the symptoms she's talking about, the goo that's coming up there?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something interesting. We used to give a drug called Phenergan, and we don't give it anymore because there was some research that came out of the CDC that showed that a number of babies were dying from the medication we were giving because basically it reduced their ability to actually breathe well as infants. And so we stopped giving these medications and basically stopped giving all the medications because it was reducing their respiratory response. And the risk was very, very tiny, but it doesn't matter. You reduce all risks, including tiny risks. So the thing that we do right now is basically we give them, we make sure that there's a vaporizer in the room to keep the mucus moist. You use a little bulb syringe to suck the mucus out because babies are nose breathers, not mouth breathers. If you're still breastfeeding, you breastfeed your baby because it's good. It's good to breastfeed your baby. It helps the suckle reflex. It helps give nurturing. And those are kind of the things. How long did you breastfeed your baby?
A little over six months.
So you did, you know, quite a lot with breastfeeding. But no, your doc was right. It's not an allergy. It's there are numerous viral infections, and you've got a chunker there.
Yeah, he was born big. So.
All right, well, good luck. 90% of parenting I found is mucus. So good luck to you and the baby. Hope they clear up some
much.
Of that.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Now, how about you? Do you have a question for Dr. Zorba? Call in now at 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, it's time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
I would laugh at that song.
Me too. The following email came to us from a listener named Steve from Duluth, Minnesota. He writes, "Dear Zorba, on a recent show, you broached the subject of hospice to a caller as their relative had advanced Alzheimer's. As a hospice RN, I deeply appreciate you bringing this subject up on your program with such openness, but then your next statement made me shake my head as you then talked about, quote, taking away their medications, end quote. Steve goes on, please avoid this description in the future. It's one of the most common misunderstandings we have to educate patients and families on. We review medications and take away only the ones that either have served their purpose, such as a statin for a very elderly patient, to vitamins and supplements, which can be difficult to swallow. Steve concludes, many people view hospice as giving up and only soften their view when it's fully explained. Thank you. Thank you for writing in, Steve, and thanks for the work you're doing there in hospice. Zorba, your thoughts?
You know, he brings up a good point. And I think what happened was whenever, I don't remember that particular show at all, but I think that listening to it, the idea was that we are going to take away all medications. And if I said that, which I know I didn't, but I didn't clarify it. And his clarification is good. So a few things about hospice. You're not giving up when you're going into hospice. What you're doing in hospice is you're realizing that keeping yourself comfortable and dignified and respectful is the first goal, and longevity is the second goal. It's not the primary goal. And then when you go into hospice, it's a matter of looking at the medications and reducing the pill load. Some people are on, as you say, vitamins and minerals and supplements and medications that they really don't have to be on. And when swallowing becomes difficult or medications have side effects when you're in hospice, that's when they review the medications and say, what medications can we use now that can improve your quality of life, and how can we reduce the number of pills you're swallowing a day, which no one wants to swallow. You always want to swallow fewer pills. So I really appreciate that clarification. It's important for people to realize that you don't call hospice in the last few days of your life. For many people, calling it earlier improves their quality of life, and that's the goal.
Thanks a lot for that, Steve. Do you disagree with something Zorba said? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
More calls to come, as well as another interesting topic and our medical Mythbusters segment, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we take another caller, some new information out there about, and this is a puzzling topic for a lot of us, expiration dates on the food we buy.
Right, right. So the first thing people really think about is it safe? You know, where does it come from? Well, there's no standardization to a lot of the expiration dates. And really, it has to do with the manufacturers are saying, use by this because it may not taste as well. I had an aunt, my Aunt Myrtle, my favorite aunt, she would put canned goods, and she'd put a rubber band around the newest canned goods, so she would use up the older canned goods by the use date. And in fact,
you don't have to,
but it doesn't really matter for most things. But the issue has to do really with perishables and other things, such as dairy products. And so a lot of studies have shown that it's really a matter of using the smell test. In other words, smell it. You might even taste it. If it looks funny, don't use it. This mold is a very special issue. You don't want to eat food with mold right on the top of it, because mold can produce toxins. Pregnant women have to be more careful. But clearly, if you're taking food such as chicken and you're heating it up and totally cooking it, you're going to kill any salmonella or anything that's in there. And so the sell-by date really has to do with what is it going to taste like versus a safety issue with most foods.
I have a condition, undiagnosed, Zorba, called milk paranoia. Even if I open a brand new bottle of milk, I'm going to smell that just out of habit anymore. Well, dairy is something we should be extra careful
no,
with.
No. You live in Wisconsin. And so in Wisconsin, everyone always wants to have fresh milk. No, I don't think dairy has a very special thing about it. But the reality is the sell-by date, usually things are good for a week after the sell-by date. But when it comes to something like milk, if you use it all the time, you're drinking it all the time, you can really tell the difference. And so when it comes to food, I think it's more of a taste test than anything else.
Well, here's one that baffles me, Zorba. That's food. How about medications in that medicine cabinet?
Medications are a very interesting thing. First of all, the medications have an expiration date. And on the whole, the FDA, in their general rules are, if the expiration date, we'll say, is January 1st, the medication is stable until 6 months after the expiration date. So there's 6 months, it's after that. Now, it's not that it actually causes you a danger if you take it, but it may not be quite as potent. And if you're taking a drug that's important, you know, where the potency is really important, then you have to be really careful about that.
But danger-wise, health hazard-wise, how careful do we have to be?
Well, it depends on the drug. So one of the issues that you have to look at is a lot of drugs, you don't have the expiration date on the bottle where you actually have the drug. So if you know you're going to have the drug for a long period of time, such as an antiviral medication that you're using for herpes outbreaks, you want to make sure that the expiration date is on the drug. The other thing is, with drugs, you want to make sure they're stored correctly, neither too hot nor too cold. So I think when it comes to food, it's the taste test and the smell test. When it comes to drugs, keep them safely stored and have the expiration date put on the bottle, and that makes it safe.
We'll go back to our callers now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go now to Gainesville, Florida. Gainesville, hi.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thank you so much for having me on the show. My husband and I are starting to kind of get ready to start trying to get pregnant.
Great.
But so I have one thing that terrifies me about the thought of being pregnant, and that's morning sickness. I have a phobia of vomiting myself or other people near me or on TV, and I'm afraid that I'll be incapacitated if I experience morning sickness. I've done some reading about prevention of morning sickness by building up vitamin B6 levels prior to getting pregnant, and I was wondering if that is safe and effective, or if there's any other ways of potentially preventing morning sickness.
Morning sickness is so individual. You know, it's so individual. And some women, of course, have terrible morning sickness, have to be in the hospital, you know, because hyperemesis gravidarum, which is a huge thing, is where you just have this intractable vomiting. It is rare. Morning sickness is common, but that is rare. And when you read through the web, you'll read all different things to do in terms of eating, you know, small meals, crackers, you know, dried foods, wet foods. They're very individual differences. And you'll read a bunch of folk remedies, many of which, by the way, work and are very, very helpful.
Okay. Uh-huh.
You know, you've got a phobia of vomiting because it's awful. I hate to vomit. My wife, the first thing when she's sick is she'll say, if I feel sick, I have to go vomit, I'll feel better. I go, if I'm still sick, I don't want to vomit less because I don't like
right.
it. It's the worst thing in the world. When you're pregnant, your body is different. The hormones are different, and somehow you end up adjusting to the situation in a different way. So you still won't like it, but the phobia won't be there because you've got a different hormonal body that's affecting your brain differently. And the fear will not be there because you will be overcome by whatever the physiological basis is. And different things happen in pregnancy that your body just reacts differently, and somehow you just do it because you've got a baby cooking inside there, and you're going to do anything to keep yourself healthy.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
I hope that helps. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
I've heard of that phobia before, Zorba, not the most common thing, but not unheard of.
No. And the thing is, when you're pregnant and your body, first of all, is hormonally different, your brain is different, and all of a sudden, you know, the most important thing to you when you're pregnant is a healthy baby. And if you have to have morning sickness to have the baby, somehow you adjust to it differently. It's not good. It's uncomfortable. It's awful. But on the other hand, you're not ill. You're ill with a baby inside of you. It's a different perspective. And that's exactly what women have told me time in and time out.
Well, good luck. You can call in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, time again for our Medical Mythbuster segment. Today's email is from a listener named Catherine in Wisconsin. Catherine writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba," it's a very, very polite beginning. Thank you. "Like many Americans, my husband and I are taking a hard look at our eating habits and trying to come up with ways to improve them. We have always enjoyed veggies, fruits, and whole grains. We cook our own meals, and lately we've cut down on sweets and baked goods. However, we're confused about the conflicting reports that we've read and heard about high-fat dairy sources. In the past, both of us learned that low-fat dairy is best, yet we've recently read some articles advocating high-fat dairy sources. These articles maintain that the high-fat content is satiating and reduces overeating, that the body needs fat in order to function, and that sugar, not fat, is the real culprit in America's obesity epidemic. So, we're looking to you," she writes, "to help us sort out this conflicting information. What is your view on the topic, and what role do dairy products play in a healthy diet?" And signed, "Sincerely, Confused in the Dairy State."
Confused in the Dairy State.
All right, sort it out for us.
Well, it can't be confusing. So first of all, you know, we were on the low-fat bandwagon. Everything has to be low-fat.
Mm-hmm.
And new information has shown that fat is okay, the right fat is okay. When it comes to dairy products, you don't want to consume lots and lots of fat. So you can have high-fat products, butter, whole milk yogurt, 4% or greater when you're having cottage cheese fat, but you still want to have, you don't want to have enormous amounts of it. So in other words, it's not that you can't have high-fat products. You can't have high-fat products in larger amounts. So in other words, if you're drinking milk, I'm still for 1% or 2%, not for skim milk. That's a totally different product. Just because of the calories that are associated with milk, especially as an adult, you drink whole milk for children, of course, is really the milk of choice because they have different bodies. So I think there's a moderation issue. It's the amount of fat that you're taking. So moderate amount of dairy products, when we look at the Mediterranean diet, is acceptable. Large amounts are not. If you want to have, I happen to love full-fat yogurt, so I have a small container of full-fat yogurt because I like the taste of it. I don't have a large container of full-fat yogurt.
You don't eat the whole 32-ounce container in one sitting.
I do not do that.
I'll give you a dollar if you do that.
I think that puts it into perspective. You know, the other issue is the fact that for years, I, too, was on the margarine bandwagon of the fact that we should use margarine. Well, margarine, when it's thick margarine, has trans fats, and we know trans fats are bad. So I switched totally to butter. I use butter on my bread or my toast or my bagel in the morning. But I use a judicious amount of butter. I don't slather it with butter. I put some butter on there. And I think that's the way you find your balance.
Do you have a possible myth for Zorba? He's always happy to cut through the fat. Just post it to our Facebook page or send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Or don't forget, you can find us through Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now we welcome a call from Queens, New York. Hi there.
Hi.
What do you have for us? So what did you want to ask Dr. Zorba about?
Dollars for docs and physicians that take money, so you're mixing politics, health, and greed. And after this ProPublica, this muckraking website, started publishing Dollars for Docs, I looked up one doctor, a dermatologist that I was going to, and in a period from 2013 to 2014, 518 days, this doctor took $325,330 from different pharmaceutical companies. So, of course, he is going to prescribe the pharmaceuticals that they produce. This made me very, very angry, as you can imagine.
Right,
and
right.
Zorba, he's not the only person worried about this. This has been a controversy among physicians, among health advocates.
Right.
Is money, vacations, things like that, affecting what doctors are prescribing, and even the research? What's your take on all that?
Well, first of all, it's a good website. And this actually has to do with the Sunshine Clause in the Affordable Care Act. That's where this came from. And Charles Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, was actually one who insisted that this get put in there. I think that there's a balance between here. When you look at a doctor who's taken $325,000, which is a ton of money when it comes from that means that's a major source of income, obviously, $325,000. I think you're right to assume they probably are going to prescribe more name brand medications. And the question is, that's a lot of money that comes, that comes in there. And how does that influence prescribing? So you were seeing this dermatologist. What sort of care did you get from the dermatologist?
Nothing. He just wanted to prescribe different medications for me. When I looked them up, the side effects were too strong, including headaches and increasing my blood pressure. And since I'm 77, I run 3 miles every day now.
Wow.
I've done 30 marathons. I've done even one Ironman in Hawaii.
30 marathons.
So my background is in teaching and exercise physiology. So I'm very concerned. I'm sure everybody will be as they get older. But when I saw this and I looked up these medications, I saw they weren't going to do the job at all that I wanted. And then I started finding out about other things since I started to have what is called overactive bladder. And when I went to a couple of different urologists, again, they prescribed different medications without asking how much did I drink, calories of sugar overall, natural, my activity level. And
those are the important things that add into an evaluation.
This is what just infuriated me.
You bring up such important points. So the question is, where does the pharmaceutical industry play a role? And it's important to be to do things, because the pharmaceutical industry, looking on their behalf, invents new medications that can be very, very useful. But what's important is to separate out the pharmaceutical industry from the medications you give. Generic is the name of the game. When a generic will be cheaper, that's what you use. And if it's a name brand drug, does it really have an advantage? Is it a step forward or not? That's number one. Number two, when you go to a doctor, you want your doctor to take the time to say, what's going on in your lifestyle? Not just prescribe a medication, but let's look at other ways to deal with it naturally. And for you, running 30 marathons, I think that's the bottom line. So you bring up some great points for our listeners, and for that, I really want to thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, and good luck.
Thank you.
Before we head out today, Zorba, let's try something a little different. We're going to look at two emails we received from listeners with contrasting views on a joke you recently made. The first comes from a Wisconsin...
Wait a minute, the joke police now?
It's that one joke you made in the last couple of months. This first one is from a Wisconsin listener named Ken, who writes, "Hello, Dr. Pastor. On a recent show, I heard your broadcast where you were discussing jicama. You made the comment about spending 2 to 3 times more at Whole Paycheck." At a Whole Foods.
Yes, Whole
store.
Paycheck. Yes,
I just wanted to say, he writes, this is a very old, tired, and not accurate joke. I'm a vice president of sales and marketing for a probiotic manufacturer. I'm a vendor to Whole Foods, Target, and other retailers. No special defense of Whole Foods, but your comment made me cringe. Okay, that's one. Hold on. Now let's hear a different perspective. This is from a listener named Dean. Dean writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. My wife and I enjoy your radio show and look forward to it each week. We both had a chuckle recently about your comment regarding shopping at Whole Foods, a.k.a. Whole Paycheck. It's something I tease my wife about every time she shops there. So now I sing this little jingle. I don't know the tune, but I'm just going to recite it.
But you are a singer.
I'm going to recite it for you, Zorba.
But no, you could do the tune. You could do it as a tune. Go ahead.
So this is Dean's jingle. Why pay less when you can pay more? Do your shopping at the Whole Foods store.
That's just something.
Thanks for the show, Dean writes. We love it. Point, counterpoint, Zorba. Which side are you on?
The reality is... Whole Foods, in my mind, and I'm not going to go back and forth on it, you have to decide where you're spending your money. And so there are many grocery stores in our town, and you have to decide if you're spending more money or less money and what value you get for it. So Whole Foods, Whole Paycheck, like you said, it's a tried and true joke, and you have two sides to the story. So I think I will let our listeners decide which side they're on.
You shop, you decide. Do you have a question for Zorba? He's always happy to help. Post on our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or you just want to download the show podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1007Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.